All right, on your outline, by the way, anybody else need one? Casey, Becky has yours. Is anybody else okay? Please, just one? Okay. We start out with this. I ask us if we can think of some ways in which this theme of Christ as the gift giver for the church is related to his work as the head of the church. And I want to see if we can kind of make the thought connection that bridges us to the side of the river we need to travel today. Can you think of how his place as the head of the church gives him not only the ability but the right to function as the gift giver to the members of the body of the church?
He knows what gifts they need.
All right, so if he is the head, well, then one part of that is that he is the source and the director of the life of the body. Therefore, it is his business to equip and to use the members of the body as he knows to be best. And there are two passages I didn't put on the paper, but I want to suggest the text for this idea. One of them is 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 18. If you want to jot that on your paper, and then let's look at it right quick. 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 18. We read this briefly a while back in focusing on another part of it, but think of the impact of this statement here. Who has it located?
But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body just as he pleased.
All right, so the idea is in this passage that the members of the body do not for themselves declare for themselves what their place in the body is going to be. The idea is that God in his providence and his wisdom does so. Can anybody suggest how this statement might be related to the parable of the talents in Matthew 25?
Well, he gave the people only the amount of talent that he thought they could handle.
All right. So did the three characters in the parable of the talents decide which ones were going to get five talents or two talents or one talent? Or did the owner decide that and give to them as he thought best? Well, obviously the owner did in that case, and that would be related to this statement here. The other passage that is important for the thought that we are pursuing today is in Ephesians 4. And this is actually something that was in our daily Bible reading this past week. Both this statement and the text from Psalm 68, which is the background of it. Notice verses 7 and 8 in Ephesians 4. He's mentioned in verse 4 that there's one body, but now look at what he says here, and this is in the context encouraging the unity of the body. Tim, would you read these two verses, please?
But to each one of us, grace was given according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, it says, when he ascended on high, he led captive a host of captives, and he gave gifts to men.
All right. Now, the idea that there's something given to each one according to the measure of Christ's gift, that this is in fulfillment to the prophet who, in Psalm 68, who speaks of him ascending and then giving gifts to men. And if you wonder what kind of things he's talking about in terms of gifts, then look at verse 11. Paul specifies more clearly here the kinds of things that he's talking about. And it would seem to me that what he means when he speaks of gifts is roles, R-O-L-E-S, and whatever resources are necessary to equip people for those functions. Look what he says, verse 11.
And he gave some as apostles, and some as prophets, and some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers.
All right. Now, the idea of Christ as a gift giver for the church then involves the will of God in setting members in the body as it pleases him, and then the work of Christ in supplying them, those members of the body, with the resources and the ability to function in the ways in which God has set them in the body. That's the idea. Now, that leads us to ask about, well, what then is the purpose of the body? What kind of work are the members of the body going to need to be able to do together? And so on your paper, we've asked about the tasks that make up the work of the church, or the broad tasks that make up the mission of the church. Now, I know that I have most often heard the work of the church described as evangelism, edification, and benevolence. Haven't you heard it that way? Those are the simplest and most profound ways of describing the mission of the church. Evangelism, helping people to become Christians. Edification, teaching them to observe everything that the Lord has commanded. And benevolence, doing good, or showing mercy in the world. Let's broaden the idea, not to make it a different word, but to be a little more detailed about the different aspects of that work here. And for time's sake, this morning, I'm going to offer the summaries and provide for you the passages beside them there, but we're not going to take our class time to read the passages for these things. This is a risky way to do this, but you'll recognize what I mean here. The first task assigned to the church is the what I'll call the good newsing of the world. The evangelizing of the world. And I say it this way so that we're not just simply using a religious word. The idea of evangelism is announcing what God has done in establishing His kingdom through Christ and offering people an inheritance within it. Whether it is go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, or whether it's go and make disciples of all nations, or whether it's to the apostles, you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the earth, or whether it's being ambassadors for Christ and pleading with people not to receive His grace in vain. All of that is included in this idea. The second great task in the mission of the church is our taking care of each other. And this is more than simply materially or financially or whatever. This is attending to each other in terms of daily need, but also certainly in terms of moral and emotional support and spiritual fellowship and helping to support each other in every other kind of way. We've used the model of the early church in Acts 2, Acts 4, Acts 11, which are mostly concerned with the daily needs and help in the midst of emergency situations like famine and that sort of thing. But then in 2 Corinthians 9, of course, the great project in which a collection is taken from the Gentile churches established by Paul to take to the needy saints in Jerusalem at a critical time. That idea is an important part of this. The third thing expected of the church is meeting together for service or worship in remembering the Lord. We touched on this as we studied about Christ as our high priest, but the idea here is simply on the first day of the week, the disciples came together to break bread, to remember Christ, to be together. And our assembling together to urge each other on in love and good works, in Hebrews 10, or the whole church coming together with singing and teaching and praying and the Lord's Supper and giving. So that's a part of this idea. The fourth great task that we have as Christians is encouraging each other in growth. How can I say this in a different way? Instructing each other, teaching each other, feeding each other. I hesitate to use just encourage, so let me say it this way. Encouraging, there's no short way to say it. How about if I put maturing each other? Would that work? The idea of teaching, admonishing, encouraging, instructing each other so that we learn Christ, so that we're brought into the image of Christ. And this would be otherwise described as edifying each other, of course. And then, number five, there is the doing good to those outside the church as well, to the community, to the neighbors, to all people. Just say it that way. Doing good, and the ideas for this. If you look in Acts 5 at the way the presence of the apostles blessed people. I mean, it's a time when everybody wanted to even be in the shadow of the apostles and so forth. Mm-hmm. Galatians 6:10, I read last Sunday in the sermon where we're instructed to do good to all men, but especially those of the household of faith. And the doing good or the helping that's done is with a view toward teaching people about the church, helping people to learn about what God's family is. Those at least are my suggestions about a way to understand in kind of a practical sense what kinds of tasks, what kinds of functions will need to be ongoing in the life of a congregation. Now, they still fit the evangelism, edification, benevolence model, but you can see that they each of these have several different things that are going to be necessary to make them happen. For example, meeting together for worship. Somebody will have to prepare the Lord's Supper. Somebody will have to figure out how we're going to conduct that particular assembly so that it can be done in an orderly way. Somebody have to open the door, somebody have to lock it up. You know, that sort of thing. And that's true with all of these situations. Now, having said that, let's read some passages And I'm going to just ask you, as we read these, what one point strikes you the most when we read this, especially with regard to Christ giving to his church the abilities and the resources to accomplish these five functions? Let's start with Ephesians 4. We were already there. Tim, you read verse 11. Let me ask you, just read 11 again and go down through 16. And ask everybody, what's the main principle you see here that we ought to follow in getting this work that we've described here done? What's the main thing that ought to be observed here about getting this work done? Tim?
And he gave some as apostles, some as prophets, and some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of service, for the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him, who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love.
All right. Now, our theme here, what principle strikes you there that we need to use?
Unity.
All right. The idea of working together will be one of them. Now, if Christ is the one who supplies the body with the roles, the people to fill the roles we've talked about, then it would be foolish of any member of the body to reject what the other members of the body do. That's one thing. Anything else that strikes you here?
I look at verse 15 and it says, rather let our lives lovingly express truth. And in my Bible, it's got a parenthesis, all things speaking truly, dealing truly, and living truly.
All right. That is one of the necessary things in order for this to... for us to be able to work together, the idea of the truth and love. Becky?
Grow up in all aspects of Christ.
All right, to grow up and
so that the body can grow.
All right, the body doesn't grow aside and apart from the head of the body. What strikes me when I read about this and think of it in this particular light? Being specific here about this particular thing is that if Christ is the one who gave the body apostles and prophets and so forth, and sometimes we think that he gave these people these functions to the body, and then these functions are supposed to get all the other members of the body ready to function. It may be saying that the doing of these roles enable the rest of the body to be the rest of the body. That not that these people then give gifts to the rest of the body, but the different things that members of the body can do will flourish when these roles are being honored and being fulfilled. Now, there are, in this passage, there are some roles which are one-time roles. I mean, the apostles are still the apostles, even though they have died, and the prophets are still the prophets. However, some of these roles are repeatable ones with each generation. That is, There always are evangelists who preach the word that the apostles and prophets made known. There are elders who shepherd the flock. There are and there have to be teachers all the while. So what I see here is the importance of then allowing these the ones who are cut out from these functions by the Lord to function in these ways. In other words, if you have the person who really is equipped to do this, trying to do all the other things too, or to do this, then the body gets weakened to that degree. Christ gives these roles in order to allow all the members of the body to function as they should. So, if the one who does this tries to do everything for the whole body, then he's missing the point of what the Lord meant. And I at least can notice that principle in this passage, and I think it'll be borne out in some of the others that we read. Skip down with me to 1 Corinthians 12 again. Yes, Eddie.
Could I add
this? Yes, please.
That leaves a lot for the rest of us to do besides the apostles and the preachers and so forth.
Yes.
We are to mature so that we can
help the body grow. All right. Yes. There's the stability to be able to honestly function and work together and so on. It gives a certain dignity to all the rest of the members of the body and the need for the whole church to be being itself and functioning as it should.
I see a responsibility here.
Yes,
too.
Yes.
Are you getting that?
Yeah. I think...
Well, those who have talents need to be willing to exercise them.
Yeah. The working in due measure, it says, of each part, the proper working of each part. That means that there is a responsibility. In our physical bodies, if one part is not working, we tend to try to make that member responsible right away, or else excise him. And that's a pretty drastic way of doing it. But you think about how far Paul's illustration goes here. But the responsibility of membership means that there is a function. There are no unresponsible members in that way. That's true. Look at 1 Corinthians 12 now. And we read verse 18. Let us read it again and go down through verse 26 this time. Becky, do you mind? Okay.
But now God has placed the members of each one of them in the body, just as he desired. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now there are many members, but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Or again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which deem less honorable, on these we bestow more abundant honor, and our unseemly members come to have more abundant seemliness, whereas our seemly members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacked, and that there should be no division in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it.
All right. Now, you guys have noticed that in most worldly organizational charts and most views of civil government or in business models, there will be the idea that the most efficient type of working or managing involves centralized planning. The idea that when power is invested in a few very, very capable people, then the activity will be more efficiently planned and carried out. However, God organizes the church so that it is a body in which those who are less noticeable and less impressive often are the most necessary. Why did he do it that way, according to what Paul says here? Why has the Lord will for his church to function as a body which has so many members, in which the ones who seem to be the less noteworthy are so often the most necessary? Why? Paul gives the answer. I'm giving a hint here. He gives the answer.
To keep unity so that one doesn't get to thinking they're more necessary than the other people.
All right. And there's one, that's so that there's not pride, but also there's another pole to this same thing. Also so that no one
thinks they're not good enough.
Thinks he is not needed at all. And I don't know which is the bigger issue in the church. I've been involved in it a long time now. I've seen sometimes the tendency, I'm more important than anybody else, I can do everything. But I really think more often, I have seen the idea, oh, my little bit won't matter much. They won't miss me. I'm not needed. And I think the picture of the body challenges both of those assumptions. Look at Romans 12, verses 3 through 8. Got anything you want to add? Remember, you're a member of the body. You can say what you want to say. Romans 12, verses 3 through 8. Anybody else? Okay. Using the same picture, but I want to ask if there are any additional thoughts that this passage might add on our work together in the church, or our work together in the body of Christ. Verses 3 through 8. Who would like to read? Jan, go ahead.
For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are in one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them, if prophecy in proportion to our faith, if service in our serving the one who teaches in his teaching, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness.
All right. Now, what thought there strikes you that we need, especially when we add it to the other passages that we've read this morning? What thought is necessary there?
He has different gifts. Is what I'm seeing. There's just so many different things, even just giving.
All right. There's so many different things, and there are things that we don't, sometimes we don't regard as special abilities or special gift, like giving or encouraging or showing or doing acts of mercy. Is it really true that there are some people who are cut in the church, who are more cut out, more equipped to show acts of, to engage in acts of mercy than others are? And is it really the case that there are some who are a lot better at exhorting than others are? Yes, it is. So how does the Lord want us to go about this then? Does he want me to be comparing myself to Becky and saying, well, she should do that a lot better? Or does he want me to make sure I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing to the best of my ability? Debbie?
Something that I see, we're all supposed to be doing what we can do to the best of our ability. But sometimes our weaker members, I'm afraid that they get neglected. And we tend to let them slide between the cracks.
Well, there's a...
I mean, they have a responsibility, it's true. But...
In any group of human beings, I think that is likely to happen to one degree or another. In this case, we'd have to ask, all right, well, how does the Lord arrange the body so that we might attend to that situation? Look in this list in Romans 12. What provision has he made here for that? For us to attend to that problem? Well, we would need the one who leads would have to be paying attention to whether there are some who are being neglected. The one who teaches would have to be teaching people about their responsibility to remain faithful, trying to feed them and help them. The one who exhorts would have to seek out the one who is weak or needing encouragement to encourage them, and so on. The one who does acts of mercy might find a need in these lives in order to show a kindness or do a kindness to them. You see kind of what we're... There's no solution to this other than the body being the body.
Current buzzword today is diversity.
All right. And we... 20 years ago, the idea was, the way for us to go about this is to have unity in diversity, and that really meant everybody knew what they want. The more biblical view is unity through diversity, meaning that there is one body, but it is strong by the functioning of many members who believe the same thing, who are loyal to the same Lord, but who do what only they could do. That's the idea. Ruth, you've been wanting to say something. Go ahead.
Nobody does it perfect the first time they try something. And I think maybe that's...
Or the second, or the 100th, or, yeah.
But you see what I'm getting at is people don't have the confidence just to... I can encourage somebody. Well, no, you may say the wrong words to start with, or you may stick your foot in your mouth, but you keep trying.
Yes.
And I think that's where we're missing up on some of this.
Well, this is the point. The faith would mean, and this is what Paul says at the start of this passage we just read, faith would mean where I believe the Lord has cut me out to be able to do something in the church. Therefore, I will start out and I will try. And I will try until somebody tells me, you know, you did all right at that. So maybe you ought to try that again. And it's not where a member just says, all right, I'm the preacher, I'm the bus driver, I love Carl, but probably being the bus driver right now is not what he's cut out for. Isn't that right, Carl? Would you explain to the class why? Okay, you see what I'm... Carl has vision limitations, you see. A lot of times it is being the person wanting to do something for the Lord, starting to do what he can, being encouraged to do it more, and keeping on until he does it well.
Bill, one thing I've found that's helped me over the years is to find someone different than myself to team up with.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a lady friend that we've been visiting one day a week for 35 years, and we are as different as daylight and dark, but what I can't do, she can fill. And it's so much easier than going by myself.
That's a great point. This particular congregation has an old history of that kind of thing. Fred Wilson and Everett D. Lowe. A lot of you did not know them. I'm sorry you didn't. But they were as different as two fellows could be. And they knocked doors and they made visits and they taught people. And it's a great, they were a great example of what you're saying. Well,
I think there's one thing that we have a failing toward, and I don't know what the cure is, but we tend to take song leader, for example. We have a good song leader. Mm-hmm. So why should I worry about being a song leader? These people are taking care of it. They're doing a good job. And therefore, I don't develop my talents as a song leader.
All right, that's a good point. How do we go about involving and developing additional talents? So, you know, what did the two talent man get for using his two talents?
Two more.
So it's not like you're stuck with just this one thing only. How do we spread out? I've got some questions on your paper at the bottom there that will help to talk about this. Maybe I meant just to do this today. Maybe we need to return to that idea next week. Jot down your thoughts about it. I believe a member of our body rung the bell about 7 minutes ago. You all are excused. Thanks for being with us this morning.